This is Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson at City Hall, actually in the police station in Galesburg. They have a new sort of method or tool in the arsenal, you might say, to catch drivers who might be driving under the influence in some form or fashion, and we're pleased to talk to Chief Idle about that. Chief, how are you? Thanks for your time.
Very good, thank you.
There's been a story in the news about being able to test the blood of impaired drivers, something that officers, once they're trained, can be able to do now. Talk about how that came out, and I imagine this is something that's probably worked for probably as long as anyone can think of in other cities and things, right?
Well, we've been doing it for decades, but historically, if we needed to get someone's blood, we would have to take them to the hospital emergency room and have a phlebotomist doctor or nurse draw the blood at the hospital, which is very time-consuming and very expensive as well. With the state passing the new legalization of cannabis, the only way for us to determine the quantity of THC in a person's system is through a blood draw. So in order to prepare ourselves for the driving while impaired under cannabis cases that are bound to come our way, we're instituting this phlebotomy program so that we can legally and safely draw that blood ourselves.
That was my next question as to if this had anything to do with the legalization of recreational marijuana. And I imagine it's something that you'd been thinking about since the law was signed last year, maybe even before that.
Yes, when new laws come out that are going to affect policing and law enforcement, it's important for us to be ready for those things as they come and to prepare ourselves with training and equipment or whatever needs are out there. And this program is one step in that direction.
At this point, if I understand right, you have at least one officer that's been trained to be able to do this?
Yes, we have one officer, Officer Allison Buckelow, who's gone off and got the training to do this, again, legally certified as a phlebotomist, so she can legally and safely draw blood.
That's the first step, is to be able to train to be more or less a phlebotomist, right? Talk about the process in that regard.
Well, it's a program through the state of Illinois and Richmond College. There's book work to be done, study work to be done, as well as clinicals, actual hands-on practical clinicals where they draw, I believe she said, 100 blood draws in order to get certified under the supervision of a medical professional. So we have a policy in place now that was provided to us also by the state, so that we're protecting ourselves and protecting the citizens. Have all the equipment in place, and she's ready to go.
Better her than me, I guess. I'm still, to this day, terrified of needles. I'm not sure that I'd be able to do that. And I guess maybe that said, are there officers that maybe aren't interested in getting this training, or is it something that every officer will have to do at some point?
No, it's definitely not something every officer will do. Very few. Right now we only have one. At some point we could have maybe two or three, but no more than that.
And results, are you able to get those quicker than if you took somebody to the hospital and went through that process?
No, that process is the same. Once we obtain the blood draw, whether it's from the hospital or here on our own, we still have to send that off to the Illinois State Police Crime Lab for testing. So that process will remain identical.
So what does that do when you're investigating a case of someone who might be under the influence of cannabis?
Well, if a person is arrested for driving under the influence, they're arrested and processed for the charge and given a court date, and then we then send the blood off to the lab to get the results back, and that'll be used as part of the prosecution down the line.
So at some point you have to really, at least at first, you have to really believe that driver is under the influence and hope that the results kind of come back and confirm that.
Yes. Under Illinois law, the only time we will ask someone for a chemical test is after they've already been arrested.
Do you anticipate having to do something like this often now that small amounts of cannabis are legal in the state of Illinois, and especially as the city gets closer to opening a cannabis dispensary?
Well, the exact numbers are still to be seen, but in looking at other states that have passed legalization marijuana laws, their driving while impaired under cannabis arrests and injuries and fatalities have increased by upwards of an excess of 400%. So, we expect an increase.
Well, that sounds like that's going to give a force that could probably be pretty taxed from day to day that much more work to do.
The public safety costs involved with the legalization of cannabis is certainly a concern, but it's not our place to question or have an opinion about what laws are passed by the legislature. Our place is simply to do our best to protect the citizens and enforce the laws.
I saw where at least one friend of mine heard a story about this and said, well, what about the rights of the accused? That's obviously something that you take into account every time you make a traffic stop, right?
It is a primary function of the police to protect the citizens, and one of the things we protect citizens from is from the police, a statement that I made in a council meeting earlier. So, yes, protecting a person's rights is always foremost on our mind. We have to have probable cause to believe that the person's impaired and make a custodial arrest before we would request a chemical test, whether it's breath, blood, or urine. And then, obviously, there's checks and balances in place through the legislature and through the courts to check to make sure things are done properly and protect people's rights.
Backing up to the idea of having to send the blood samples to the state police crime lab for processing, I know that's something at least the current governor in this past year has expressed concern about the backlog and trying to limit that, or lessen that, in at points in time. Is that a concern at all, that it might take a little while to get the results back from the lab?
The crime lab definitely has a backlog of different kinds of cases. We have not seen a problem with not getting our results back soon enough to be used one way or the other for prosecution of the case. But the backlog of the crime lab in reference to physical evidence or DNA or blood results is always something that's a concern. But that, again, is outside of our control and something the state has to worry about.
Are there things in the works in terms of further ability to test for impaired driving, or is sort of blood testing, I guess I'm thinking top of the line right now? Are there other ways that you see being able to do it in the future?
There are emerging technologies under investigation, but there's nothing on the forefront. Something would have to come out and be proven to be valid and then go through the court system and accepted by the courts before it could ever be used. So blood's going to be it for the foreseeable future.
All right. Before I run out of time here, I hear you have some new vehicles coming in. I was just getting used to the fancy set of squad cars you have already, and now you have more coming in.
Yes, so we're on somewhere in the area of a four-year replacement process with our squad cars. In our studies, that seems to be the sweet spot that's most cost-effective with taxpayer money when you take into account the cost of the vehicles as opposed to what it costs to maintain them and repair them. It seems like the best way to use taxpayer dollars is somewhere right around the four-year mark, and we're up for a new squad of cars here this year.
How many are you looking at?
Right now, we're going to be purchasing 12.
I remember talking a while back with Sheriff Clegg about this in terms of his department's squad cars. You see them out on patrol, I guess, as a citizen all the time, but those end up really getting more miles on them than I would ever actually even think about just patrolling the city on a given basis.
Yes, our cars are a 7-day-a-week, 365 squad car. They're used constantly by all three shifts all the time, so we put a lot of miles on those cars real fast.
How many miles does a typical squad car have on it before you end up replacing it?
Oh, somewhere in the ballpark of at least 100,000.
Oh, my gosh. That blows my mind. And it's nice to have them on days like this when it's cold outside. You don't have to get out very often, I imagine.
Keeping people safe and keeping them warm is certainly a concern, but we want to make sure we provide our police officers with the equipment they need to be able to keep the citizens safe, and that's important.
Suppose I should ask, since we're coming up on a night where we have the coldest night of the year here so far, it's probably worth noting, what sorts of protections are in place, or what do officers think about when weather gets as cold as it is or as snowy as it is today or things like that? And how does that compare to hot weather months?
Well, hot weather and cold weather both can be issues regarding safety. It becomes a life safety issue, and when we transfer over into a life safety mode, that becomes our primary concern, even above and beyond what you consider a standard law enforcement mode. So on a cold night like this, we're doing things like checking cars that are stopped or broke down the side of the road to make sure there's nobody in them, keeping an eye on the homeless population, make sure they're not out in the exposed weather. Even simple things like responding to calls and looking for animals left out, either forgotten or put out by irresponsible pet owners. On nights like this, it becomes more about protecting human life than it does enforcing the law. Although if law enforcement becomes necessary, we'll do that too.
I imagine that's there are probably opportunities or times when officers even have to help get someone that might be out in the elements like this to someplace warm and safe at least for a little while.
Yeah, that kind of thing, exactly. If it's 60 degrees outside and you're out walking around and not where you need to be, then you're probably on your own. When it's negative 10, you're going to get our attention and we're going to do what we can to help you.
You run into situations where you see people out in the elements like this and they just don't want your help?
That can happen, and this is America. If you don't want our help, well, then that's your right. But we're going to have that help available and make ourselves there and accessible to you if anyone were to need us.
Chief Russ Idle, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for everything that you and the officers do for us and for the community. And we appreciate your time as always.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back in the studio with sports and business news next. And coming up at 5:40, we'll talk about the passing of a former Monmouth College president and how he helped shape the college in what was otherwise a very difficult time for it. We'll have that coming up as Galesburg's Evening News continues on WGIL.